This is Digital Story Podcast number 587, June 6, 2017. Today's theme is WWDC Keynote from a Photographer's Point of View. I'm Derek Story. If you were in San Jose for the 2017 WWDC Keynote Address, I sure hope you didn't drink too much coffee beforehand. This year's presentation was a marathon 2.5 hours covering Apple TV, the Mac, all the OSs, Apple Watch, iPad, and the brand new HomePod. And thankfully for us, there was a little photography mixed in there too. And that's going to be the focus of today's show. One of the good things about having photos as part of the operating system is that, you know, there's a good chance for news about it at the Apple Developer Conference, right? Because we know there's going to be a new OS, or in this case, really four OSs, right? Because we have macOS, watchOS, iOS, and we have tvOS. We know the odds are good that we're going to see some photos mentioned. I think the thing that I wonder, and the thing I wondered out loud in the article that I wrote on Saturday, anticipating what may happen at WWDC, which stands for, by the way, Worldwide Developer Conference. It's in San Jose this year. It's going on right now down there at San Jose. How much airtime will the photography applications get during the keynote address? Because I'm not there as a developer, so I don't get to go to all the behind-the-scenes sessions and all that sort of stuff. So I pick up a lot of clues from what I see during the keynote, and especially what they show on the screen while they're talking about the software. Fortunately for us, we made the keynote address. Yes, we had a lot of photography this year. I was pretty happy about it, including new photos for macOS and photos for iOS. And they take on different features, even though they interop, as we all know, through iCloud. So what I thought I'd do is take you through what I thought were the five outstanding things, or the five things that really jumped out at me during this marathon. I even had to get up and go to the bathroom. I wasn't even in the audience, you know. So I picked my moments and, you know, did, well, okay, we don't need to go down that road. All right, so here we go. Let's talk about some of the things that I saw during the address that I thought was relevant for us as photographers. First thing, in photos for macOS. So as I was watching the discussion about it, the first thing that I noticed is that I saw interface changes. And that's a good news, bad news situation for me. As a consumer, I think that's good news because Apple tends to continue to polish and refine their interfaces. And most of the time, they go in the right direction. Every now and then, they'll take a half a step back. This case, it looked like it was a step in the right direction. The interface looked more polished than ever. So there are changes there. Now, the bad news for me, as a book author and a video trainer, that means that any updates that I do or any new titles or any of that kind of stuff, I have to reshoot all the screenshots. You know, we can't just talk about the new stuff and drop in a few new screenshots. Everything has to be reshot. But I'm willing to do it to have a better user experience. So I saw that right away. I noticed that right away, and it looked good to me. But we have some unexpected surprises too, including the addition of a curves adjustment to photos for macOS on the desktop. And that was a bit of a surprise because Apple, up until this point, had left the sophisticated adjustments to the third-party developers, the folks doing editing extensions. And they stuck with the stuff that worked really great but was easy to use. So adding curves, to me, is a little step outside of that box because curves are easy to use once you know how to use them. They're one of those kinds of things, right? So it's not just like the brilliance slider where you move it one way or another and eight things are happening beneath the hood, algorithms that Apple has put in there. Curves is curves. So we see curves in there. We see selective color editing, which I'm really thankful for. I love selective color editing, and I'm really happy that I don't have to go to an editing extension to do those simple things. What does that mean? That means, for instance, I'll give you the perfect example, the one that I use all the time. Let's say that I have to shoot some portraits indoors at a business. A lot of times those businesses will have fluorescent lighting. So even though I get the lighting on the subject the way that I want, the background a lot of times will have this greenish tint to it. And by using selective color adjustment, I can just choose that greenish tint and I can desaturate it a bit or shift it a bit, shift the hue a bit, whatever I need to do, and get rid of it. And suddenly everything looks great. And there are a million uses for selective color adjustment. I think it's one of the most useful tools for image editors, and that will be native inside of Photos right now. So that's really nice. And then if I heard them right on stage, we're going to have synchronized adjustments with third-party apps, and I'm assuming that's going to be editing extensions, where not only do you get to use the editing extension within Photos, and then it comes back. Now, right now as we stand, you can undo anything that you do in the editing extension, or you can even see a before and after in Photos, but you didn't have the whole history and you couldn't return to that editing extension and pick up where you left off. You would start over. In other words, it would be pretty much baked when it came back into Photos, other than doing an entire undo. If I understood them correctly, the synchronized adjustments thing will be that we can use an editing extension, bring it back into Photos, let's say share it, print it, whatever we do. And if we want to go back and work on that image some more, and I'm thinking Luminar in my brain right now, if I want to go back and work on that image some more, then I can send it back, let's say into Luminar, and I could pick up where I left off. I don't have to start over again. That, to me, sounds really exciting, and I think it will supercharge those editing extensions even more. So that's pretty cool. Also, they have spent some more time with the photo books functionality in there, and I guess they're supposed to be very nice. I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like. And then the one thing that I really did anticipate, which is more machine learning-based organization. And we really see that in the iOS version of Photos, but we're going to see it here too. So essentially, the whole thing with categories and with object recognition, with facial recognition, all that stuff is going to have more depth. It's going to work faster. It's going to be more accurate. And that makes organization so much easier in Photos when you can just type in ocean or car or truck or whatever, and it just presents to you all the images in your library that match that search term. So that'll be exciting to see how that improves. And machine learning and artificial intelligence, of course, was a theme that ran through the whole keynote address, manifesting in many different ways, and Photos is part of that. So Photos itself is looking pretty good. We got some nice image adjustments. We have some goodies that were unanticipated, and looks like we get a new user interface, so I'm pretty happy about that. Number two, Photos for iOS goes a bit of a different route. So if you're using an iPad or iPhone, Photos beefs up in some different ways. Now, of course, all this information is shared via iCloud, but in terms of what you actually are looking at via the user interface, what Photos for iOS have done is really beefed up memories. And that makes sense, right? Because it's easier to do searches and stuff, keywords, all that, on a desktop version. When you're using a mobile version, that stuff isn't as convenient. So having memories be even smarter and give you more artificial intelligence to help you find your stuff, that makes sense on a mobile device. So new memories are going to include pets, sporting events, performances, outdoor activities, night out, wedding, anniversary, and baby. So those will all be new memories. Now, in addition to that, we're going to get some new codecs, and we're going to get them for both still images and video. And basically, the compression decompression algorithms are going to be smarter, so they're going to work faster. The file sizes are going to be smaller, and the image quality will be at least as good or better. Now, JPEGs are being replaced buy a new codec, which I think is very interesting, but they say it's going to be just as compatible as a JPEG. We'll have to see how all that shakes out on the iOS version of Photos. But it makes sense because, again, we have limited capacity on our mobile devices, or we're using cloud to store our stuff. So if we can have high-quality files that are even smaller, that's a good thing in that particular environment. And then finally, Live Photos receives a lot of attention. Live Photos now, you will have, you know, and there are these little movies that happen when we take a still photo. Now we're going to be able to trim our live photos. We're going to be able to select the key photo. So if you're shooting a live photo of something and there's a frame that really just captures that live photo, that now can be the key photo, which will show in your library. We'll be able to mute, and then they added three cool filters: loop, bounce, and long exposure. So you'll be able to loop a live photo. You'll be able to do a bounce where it goes and then it goes backwards again, right? And, you know, people do that for mashups and things like that. And then the long exposure one was just crazy, where you have regular running water and now it looks like running water shot with a long exposure where it gets all flowy and everything. I'm going to be very curious to see how that looks outside of a demo. In a demo, everything always looks really good, of course. So a lot of stuff on Photos for iOS also. And remember, these work together. So if you create something cool in Photos for iOS, let's say using the long exposure, then that will appear in your Photos for macOS library also. They're all connected via iCloud. Moving on, let's kind of stay with the mobile thing for a minute. So a hardware announcement was the new iPad Pro 10.5-inch. And I'll tell you, one thing that I really noticed in this keynote address, WWDC, is that Apple is getting super serious about the iPad. And that makes sense. The Microsoft Surface Pro is doing great. It's very powerful. The sales are good on it. And I suspect that Apple has even lost some of its users to the new Surface Pro because of all the things that it can do. It's very logical to have Apple say, hey, we're going to really beef up the iPad too and have it compete with the Surface Pro at that level, in addition to all the other cool things that the iPads do. So we're seeing that with this new 10.5-inch model. It's supercharged. First thing that I notice is that the storage capacities have been up. So now you have a choice of 64, 256, or 512 gigabytes. The lowest, cheapest configuration is 64 gigabytes, and it goes up from there. I love that because storage on an iPad, I think, is very important. And the fact that you can get 512 gigabytes of storage in an iPad, that is a beautiful thing. Also, lots of processing horsepower. There's going to be the new A10X Fusion chip with 64-bit architecture and an embedded M10 coprocessor, motion coprocessor. So this thing is beefy. This is like a computer that you hold in your hand. And I mean a real computer, like a modern computer that you hold in your hand. And then they added the new ProMotion technology. This is brand new, but essentially what it does, it increases or allows you to increase the refresh rate up to 120 hertz. So that basically, I think, doubles what's existent right now. Games, videos, all that stuff, the screen refresh is going to be very fast, very smooth, very flowy. So action will flow very nicely. But that also affects using the Apple Pencil with it, because now the Apple Pencil is going to be even more responsive and feel more like real-time drawing. So that new ProMotion technology, that benefits the user in a couple different ways. And in fact, you'll even be able to choose the refresh rate that you want. When it's higher, when it's at 120 hertz, obviously it's going to use more battery power. If you don't need that, if you're just typing emails on your iPad, you don't need 120 hertz, right? So you can, you know, be at 60, for example, save that battery power, keep working longer. So the fact that you don't have to be at 120 is also a very nice option. Now, average configurations for this device are going to run, I did some that I thought were reasonable configurations, stuff that people might do. A fair amount of storage, Wi-Fi or cellular, you know, that kind of stuff. And they were running between $700 and $1,000. So this is a new iPad Pro, 10.5 inch. With all these features and with all this horsepower and all this stuff, you're really looking at between $700 and $1,000 for this device. And that leads me to the fourth thing, which is related to this new iPad, is that Affinity Photo for the iPad really stepped up their game also. And basically, the way I look at this is that powerful hardware deserves equally robust software. It doesn't do any good for Apple to introduce this new powerful hardware in the iPad if they don't have software that can leverage it. So for example, on the Surface Pro, Microsoft Surface Pro, you have a version of Photoshop that runs on there that runs very well. Photoshop, as we know, is, you know, very capable application. Well, Affinity Photo for the desktop has really been viewed as a Photoshop competitor, a modern version of Photoshop. And now that they have Affinity Photo that is just as powerful, robust, and capable that can run on an iPad, and you can get it for $19. It's on sale right now. You can get it for $19.95. That's half price as part of this introduction. The fact that you can get something that competes with Photoshop on the desktop, Affinity Photo on a new iPad will compete with Photoshop on the desktop. And you can get it for $19.95, period, no monthly fees. That's kind of a big deal. And it does all sorts of stuff. It has a complete set of retouching tools. It has non-destructive adjustments. It has super accurate selections. They did a thing where they were selecting the hair of Johnny Depp. And it was great. That selection, you know how difficult hair is. And that selection was fantastic. It was accurate and it was easy. You can do that on an iPad. You have raw editing. You have a variety of color spaces to choose from. You have HDR merging. It works great with the Apple Pencil, so it's very accurate. On and on and on. On sale now for $20. It's capable with the iPad Air 2, the iPad 2017, the iPad Pro 9.7 inch, new 10.5 inch, and 12.9 inch. Great news for photographers is basically you could, for example, use the new iPad Pro 10.5 inch, have an Apple Pencil, have Affinity Photo for the iPad, and basically probably have more power there in your hand for photo editing than you do on your computer right now, depending on, of course, what your computer configuration is. But you get my point. This is crazy stuff. So Apple really upped the game here. Now, they improved the iPad in all sorts of different areas that I'm not talking about because it's sort of out of the scope of this particular podcast. And this podcast is not going to run 2.5 hours like the keynote address did. So there's lots of other stuff. For instance, on the 10.5-inch iPad, the built-in keyboard is improved. There's now a full-size external keyboard that's very portable. That's improved. You know, there's all that kind of stuff, too, to make this a really usable device for photographers or really, you know, anyone with an artistic bent that's on the go. So very cool stuff. So Affinity Photo for the iPad, I just think it was something that had to happen. If you're really going to up the hardware, you've got to up the software too. So between the iOS improvement and this hardware and then Affinity Photo, third-party software, killer stuff. And then finally, number five, something that I just thought had to happen, and I'm so glad they announced it. The iMac Pro, which will be released later this year. This is the Pro version. Now, this is the most powerful Mac Apple has ever created. So this is more powerful than anything else that has come before it. It is in the form factor of the iMac. And what they did was they changed the color of it. So it's this really professional looking titanium colors, this darkish titanium colors. It's actually quite beautiful. New keyboard, new mouse, new everything. But inside, that is the real story, because they're going to ship it with either an 8-core, 10-core, or 18-core Xeon processor. So this thing is going to be a rocket ship. It's crazy. And of course you have, the RAM, you have the Fusion Drive. They're using Thunderbolt 3 ports, and I think there's going to be four of them, Thunderbolt 3 ports. There's just all sorts of stuff. Obviously, the screen is 5K, the whole deal, the whole thing. So this is a professional workstation, but it is in the same form factor as an iMac, so it takes up very little room on the desk. It looks very handsome sitting there on your desk, and it's going to be a killer machine. Now, it's going to start. Now, it's a professional workstation, so it has a professional price, $4,999. That's going to be the starting price. And I suspect that you could easily get it up to $6,000 or $7,000, depending on how you deck this thing out. But for businesses that are doing video editing, for photo retouching shops, all that kind of stuff, people that really need the best hardware possible, this is going to be a machine that I think they're really going to like, and it's about time. You know, when Tim Cook said, about a month ago, that Apple really does care about the professionals, and we're all going, we're rolling our eyes, going, well, show me the money. Well, this is the money. And I think between the new iPad Pro 10.5-inch and this new iMac, I think they are showing us the money, and I think this is great-looking stuff. I'm pretty excited about it. So there was all sorts of other stuff, but those are the highlights that I think were important for us as photographers. They developed a new augmented reality toolkit for developers, so I think that's going to play out. Right now it's grass seed, but when it becomes grass, when developers start incorporate this augmented reality toolkit into their apps, then we're going to have something to talk about there. That was a good sign that Apple is serious and has been working on augmented reality. The demo was quite good of the toolkit. So I'm sure we'll see stuff about that probably sooner than later as developers jump all over it. So lots of good news for photographers. Nice presentation. It was worth the 2.5 hours that I dedicated to watch them parade all this stuff before us. In the news, this is a short piece, but I love it, okay? So much for that idea, : Swiss village lifts photography ban after story goes viral. And this was posted on DP Review. You may have heard the story where the Swiss village banned photography because it was such a beautiful place. Okay, well, listen to these two paragraphs that I have for you. Just days after, quote, banning photography, the Swiss village of, and I guess I'm going to totally say it wrong, it's Bergum, B-E-R-G-U-U with umlauts, M. Bergum has, not surprisingly, reversed course. In a bizarre video, the mayor states that until the ban of photography is officially lifted, everyone with a camera will be given a friendly special permit. The video leaves little doubt that the whole thing was a PR stunt, with Mayor Peter Nicolay proclaiming, "The beauty of our village has become world famous thanks to our friendly photography ban." Judging by how quickly the story spread, the stunt worked exactly as planned. So if you saw the first story where, and everyone picked this thing up, I think I tweeted about it, where this Swiss village, because it was so beautiful, decided to ban photography. And then, of course, a few days later, just when the timing was perfect, lifted the ban and got all of this attention. Wow. I just hope that they have plenty of inns for visitors, because there will probably be photographers flocking there from all over the place. Beautifully done, I have to say. That was a beautiful PR stunt. Image Framer 4 ups its game. A while back, and I want to say last year or maybe a little bit longer, Image Framer was a sponsor of the TDS podcast, and I had a lot of fun talking about it and going into the different things that you can do with this affordable application. Well, now Image Framer 4 is out, and wow, this is a great update. And I'm just going to give you a taste of the update today. We're going to talk about it in the next few shows here. But I thought, okay, before I delve into all the new things that are happening with Image Framer 4, I should refresh our collective memories on what Image Framer is. So we're going to do that today. And then next week, I'll delve into the beginning of some of my favorite features. This is an application for artists, professional photographers, enthusiast photographers, people who like to scrapbook, framers, people in frame shops and stuff like that, or just really anyone who wants their family photos to look better. And how do they look better? By basically having unlimited options on what goes around the image itself. So what are some of the things that this application can do? You can add artistic frames and effects. One of the things that when I first started using Image Framer that I thought was a very good application of this is that, for instance, if you have a freelance photography business or you have a professional photography business and you have a great image, let's say a branded image that you want to use to help promote your business, well, then how are you going to incorporate, the name of your business or the URL or all that kind of stuff? Well, one of the ways that you can do it is create a fantastic frame. And I'm not talking about any old boring frame. I'm talking about something that you design easily using all these tools in Image Framer and then add that information. And wow, now suddenly you have something that will catch people's eye. So that's one of the uses that I identified when I first started using Image Framer that I thought was great for people like me and you who are in this audience. Another thing that I think is really useful for is that if you're making prints, oh, I hope you are, if you're making prints and you want to try to figure out, okay, what's the best way to frame a print that will hang in my office or that will hang in this particular room at home, or a print that you're making for someone else and you go over and get to see where it's going to hang there. And you really want to go, okay, should it be this kind of frame or that kind of frame? That's very difficult when you're standing in the art shop and trying to pick out frame sizes, or you're at a framing shop, which is even more expensive. And you're trying to figure all that out, based by just looking at the image. With Image Framer, you can actually design different frames or choose different frames or go by different frames that are available commercially, make printouts, and then actually put that printout, hold it up on the wall where it's going to go and go, should it be this one? Should it be this one? Should it be this one? I always thought it was similar to if you're doing paint chips. You want to figure out, okay, what color should I paint this wall to go with the rest of the room? And you go to the paint store, you get the paint chips, you come back and you hold it up. That's what Image Framer can help you do for framing your artwork, and it's super handy. Now, the other thing, and this was probably my favorite thing for Image Framer, was creating fine art cards that just look different than everyone else's. And, if you want to create a fine art card for a holiday or for a special occasion or for travel, whatever, yes, you do have the templates that are in Photos or whatever you're using. And yes, so does everyone else. So we're all sort of looking at the same templates to make our fine art cards. Well, with Image Framer, you can actually create something that is absolutely unique to you. And not only can you create a template that's fantastic for a fine art card, you can hang on to that template and you can use it over and over again. It can even become part of your branding. Or you can open that template up and modify it slightly and then save that as another template. So you can create fine art cards that literally look different than everyone else's by using this application. This was and has been my favorite use of Image Framer. I just absolutely love doing this. I'm just going to touch on a couple of the improvements and then we'll move on to the rest of the podcast. This is stuff I'm going to be talking about up the road. Image Framer 4, it's a Photos extension, so you can use it from right within Photos. And how perfect is that? You can do batch processing with it. This is version 4. It's a Lightroom plugin. So now you have a Lightroom plugin that allows you to do all the stuff that I talked about. So we'll be talking about this stuff up the road, but I just wanted to give us all a little refresher about Image Framer before we start digging into the new features. So if you're a current user, if you use Image Framer 3, I should tell you that 4 is a free upgrade. So that's really good news. It requires now Mac OS 10.11 El Capitan or later, just so you know that. And for those of you that don't have it yet, you can receive a 20% discount by visiting our Image Framer landing page. And the link is in the show notes. You just click on that link. It takes you right to a landing page. By going to that landing page, you automatically get the 20% discount. And there's different versions of the app. I just want to welcome Image Framer aboard. This is a terrific application. I'm really looking forward to talking about it over the next few weeks. All right, just a few updates. I want to start out with our Patreon members. I think all of you got your notifications, right? Because we just had the first of the month. And I hope the thought that comes to your mind when you get that notification that your support has been sent to the digital story, that you go, yeah, that's cool. I am so proud and happy that I'm supporting this podcast, because I am so proud and happy that those of you that have decided to support the digital story, continue your support and really help keep this show on the air. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon members. I truly appreciate it. And I'm working on something for you guys right now. And I hope to be talking about that before too long. Also want to mention that the Autumn in Wine Country, we're still in private registration. Not for much longer. So if you're interested in attending this very cool workshop in October that combines viticulture with beautiful fall color, then just go to TDS Workshops page and use the Send Me Info link, and I'll get you the inside scoop, and I'm going to open it up to the public pretty soon. And finally, a big thanks to all of our friends at Red River Paper, who I've been working with a lot lately because we're getting ready for Out of Chicago. That's right around the corner. And I just wanted to remind you, I talked about this last week, but they recently announced a new fine art paper called Palo Duro Etching. It's a 100% cotton rag paper free of optical brightener additives. And it's designed to offer warm white tones, deep blacks, and subtle texture to accurately recreate traditional darkroom fine art prints. That's the kind of stuff that we get from Red River Paper and at an affordable price. A big thanks to them for supporting the show. And remember, they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Boy, wow, what a lot to digest at the keynote address. Lots of good stuff for us. I'm working on stories for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, go out and take some pictures. I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.